Tired of ads intruding into your favorite comedy podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Dive into a world of laughs by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/comedyadfree. That's amazon.com/comedyadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Hey, I'm Ryan Reynolds.
Recently, I asked Mint Mobile's legal team if big wireless companies are allowed to raise prices due to inflation. They said yes. And then when I asked if raising prices technically violates those onerous two-year contracts, they said, what the f*** are you talking about, you insane Hollywood ass f***? So to recap, we're cutting the price of Mint Unlimited from $30 a month to just $15 a month. Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month. Slows full terms at mintmobile.com.
Hello, everybody, and welcome back to the Triple Jump podcast. It's a video game podcast. My name is Ben.
My name is Peter.
And my name is Ashton.
Girl, look how orange you look. And also look at that new logo as well.
Yeah, the logo is definitely more important, but I do have a tan.
Yeah, you do.
How was your holiday plops?
Lovely. I had a lovely time. Mm-hmm. The weather was insane. Mm-hmm. I don't know if you guys know. Big old heat wave in the south of Europe at the moment.
Greece is
on fire.
Yeah. Oh, good. Okay.
And
ground temperature in Spain reached 60 degrees at one point,
I believe.
Yeah. And I was in a place where the weather was 38 degrees at some point, and then I looked at my phone, it says feels like 42. And I was like, yes, it does feel like 42.
It does feel like 42.
But I spent a lot of time in the pool and drinking gin and lemonades and having the best time ever.
Yeah, it looked good.
It was really nice. But I'm upset now because it's going to rain for like 2 weeks straight in the UK. So I wasn't even going to get to see my tan. It's just going to be just for me.
Well, I mean, just any time you're on screen with the two of us, just the contrast in skin tone is going to be quite noticeable.
So. My arm out.
Oh my God.
Ka-chow.
Jeez.
How is that? Look at the
Look at that.
It's not, it looks a bit red on camera, but I can tell you it's not red.
It's just very brown.
It's just incredibly tanned.
Yeah.
How upsetting, eh, Peter?
Sorry,
some people pay good money for a colour like that.
Yeah.
You know, on the beds.
The beds is what they call them in the business.
The
tanning beds.
The beds. Yeah. Well, it's lovely to have you back, Ashton.
It is.
I think you're feeling alive. Ready?
Yeah. Woo-hoo! My next question was, what time did you go to bed this morning?
4:15 a.m. was the last time I looked at my phone when we got back off the plane.
As your Ben crunched into his toast.
Yes. And then I woke up this morning at 7:30. But before that, I got a cheeky little wake-up call at 6 a.m. when I got a big old round of cramp in the bottom of my leg.
Oh, no.
So I woke up and I was like,
Jesus.
So yeah, I'm feeling amazing right now.
Yeah, needless to say, you're going to be on top form today.
Yeah, yesterday I was up for 22 hours straight.
Good God. So Ashton is here.
Yeah.
But also, she's not all
here.
She's
not actually
absolutely
here.
Not.
A lot of her is not currently.
Just her carcass has been propped up in the chair.
Yeah, she's shambled into work. But she's here, and that's what's important.
Yes.
What you may not have seen, Ashton, although you definitely have, while you were on holiday, is that we've undergone something of a gigantic assets overhaul, including the lovely television behind us.
Rebrand
alert. You will have seen it. We've got a new logo. It's the same logo, but now it glows. We've gone from orange to blue, really, but still a little bit of orange involved. And it looks super smart and super swish. And we'd like to thank Sam Driver of Cultaholic for helping us put all this stuff together.
Mm-hmm.
It looks really, really lovely. And we've had lots of wonderful feedback from all of you guys who are enjoying it too. I think it looks great.
Yeah, I do.
I agree with you.
We've got some new Scarlet Fire slates for the
podcast,
if you're watching the video version.
The video version, you will see those. Those have been updated too.
The music is not going there.
The Scarlet Fire, it will always be Scarlet.
Yeah.
And on fire. Much like Greece.
Much like Greece.
And also there'll be a couple of other changes coming to the... alterations. Triple Jump is altering.
Yeah.
Ashton will detail for you in a second. But first, it's time to talk about our wonderful sponsor. For this week, each and every week, we are sponsored by a very real video game adjacent sponsor. They help us keep the lights on in this room. Still no sign of Dead Island 2, the spider.
I haven't been to the toilet this morning, so I don't know if he's still in there. I haven't checked. Maybe he came on holiday with me.
Yeah, maybe you left him in Greece.
Maybe I left him in Greece.
I hope he's set on fire.
I'm going to miss that rascal.
He's probably around somewhere.
Peter has the ad read in front of him now.
Got an ad read right here. It's a new IP, a new video game's coming out with a whole new character, a whole new everything. Mm. It's about a sort of a superhero or detective, whichever you like. A superhero detective, like Batman.
I feel like that matters.
No.
Is he one or the other? Or
the point is he gets baddies. He gets them.
Yeah.
He catches the baddies.
Okay, well, remember that Ashton's not operating on a lot of sleep. So Ashton is like the level of, like, is the bare minimum.
I'm already
she has to understand this, right? Okay? You're going to need to explain it to her.
There's this guy. His name's Alan.
Okay.
Right.
Yes.
And he fights, like, you know, all the wrong-uns in the world.
Right.
He goes and catches them. He's also hot as flip.
Oh.
Wow.
He's really hot. And one of the things that he fights is like space time traveling dinosaur things. You know, there's space traveling, time traveling dinosaurs. Coming soon. He's everyone's new favorite hero, sexy crime owl. Maybe sexo crime owl, but sexo is not really a word, is it?
Sexo
crime owl.
Sexy crime owl.
Okay.
He's sexy.
Yeah.
And he's crime owl, as in he doesn't do the crimes.
It sounds like he does the crimes.
It does sound like he does the crimes. Mm-hmm.
It sounds like he does sexy crimes.
Like he's a predator.
Yeah.
But he's not.
No.
He defeats predators.
He just does crimes in a sexy way.
Is this all the subtitle?
All this additional
stuff is
I'd
on
like
the box.
I'd like to see him saunter into a bank in a sexy way.
He would do that.
Put your hands up.
And then the T-Rex goes like that.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Show me that ass.
Yeah.
That's what he would say.
He's a sexy criminal.
If you couldn't tell by the fact that that's a terrible name and it doesn't really make a lot of sense, it's not actually real.
Oh, I mean, I really thought
how
that
would
it was...
you trick me when I'm so tired?
I don't know.
So rude.
That's such a shame. And it's a shame you weren't here last week, Peter, because I also had an exoprimal sponsor.
And it was, that one was even further removed.
That went way over Ashton's head because she wasn't really conscious in the late 90s.
Yeah. Right.
I made lots of Walking with Dinosaurs references.
Okay.
I feel like it would have been right up your alley.
I would have loved it.
And unfortunately, you weren't here. You had plot.
What the pun was?
It was... You turned the guy's name into a dinosaur name.
Yeah, it was because the original was... Right, here we go. The original was narrated by Kenneth Branagh.
Oh,
yeah.
Was
so it?
It
was, I think I said that it was narrated by Kenneth Branachiosaurus.
And then it was Walking with Ainosaurs.
Yeah, Walking with Ainosaurs.
You got it.
Ainosaurs. Yeah, that's what it was called. Yeah.
Well, see, the other game coming out this month was Pikmin, but I did Pikmin 3 weeks ago.
Yeah, with Pac-Man.
So, with Pac-Man. So, there are no other big games in July, really.
It's hard, isn't it?
Yeah.
It's a hard gig, this. So, maybe you would consider supporting us at home because we're not actually sponsored by, what was it?
Sexy Crime
Owl. Sexy Crime Owl. We're sponsored by our wonderful patrons over at patreon.com/Team Triple Jump. And if you go there and support us, you can submit questions to this podcast. There's loads of other tiers and rewards available as well. patreon.com/Team Triple Jump. Please continue supporting us there, please.
Mm, yes.
Thanks very much.
But before we get to question one, everything's changing around here.
Altering, sorry.
I'm going to give you some places where you can find us on the internet.
You can't skip it anymore.
Well, you won't know exactly how much you can skip, but you can't. Don't worry, it's shortened. It's a shortened version.
Yeah, we'll cut some bits out.
We've truncated it.
All I'm going to say is head to triplejump.merp, J-U.M-P. It spells jump. It's our website. And if you go there, you can find links to everything else. It's all handy and it's there. So you can find our YouTube, our Twitch, our Discord, our Cameo as well. So head to triplejump.merp. You can also go to our shop, which is triplejumpshop.com, where you can buy sick and cool merch, such as most of this that's being modeled right now.
Yeah, you can't buy this
anymore. No, you can't buy that anymore.
Not anymore.
There might be some more merch coming soon. Well, there will be some more merch coming soon. And finally from me, patreon.com/teamtriplejump. There are loads of tiers available. Ben just mentioned part of it. But there's all sorts of other rewards as well that you can find if you go to our Patreon. So consider doing that.
Mm-hmm.
Ashton?
There is. Yeah. Hey, yes. Hello. we have a video out this week. It's the worst games ever, which everyone loves all the time. But guess what? We're changing some things.
Altering some things.
YouTube, hey, it's a minefield. No one knows what's going on.
No.
You just have to try your best.
Not even YouTube.
So we're changing things a little bit on the channel. We're taking it down to three lists a week. So one less a list. But don't worry, we're putting out even more ranked lists with, I don't know how many, we're tripling our output. That might be a promise we can't keep.
Possibly.
And we're also increasing the amount of feature pieces, which is things like what went wrong and new shows that we're developing, which I think you should watch. So that's it's all changing. It's altering in for a good way because we know what you guys like and we want to make more of that. So keep an eye out on the channel for some more stuff that is a bit different than what you're used to.
Absolutely. And those of you beautiful, wonderful Warriors Clan member who love our core personality-led stuff, like your rules bosses and your main menus, we're coming up with a plan to ensure that that spirit lifts on.
Be able to bring them
all of you.
Bring them back from the ether that they're currently swimming around.
Yeah, they're all sort of taking a bit of a stay of, what is it? Stay of
leave? Absence.
Stay of leave,
execution.
Yeah. Sure, whatever that is. They're not on the channel at the moment because of the YouTube shenanigans that Ashton alluded to. YouTube is a tough old place, so we've had to shuffle some things around, but we don't want you to think that we don't want to do those shows or we don't like doing them. We do love them, but we are coming up with a way to sort of keep them going on the channel and making sure that they are sustainable to do so.
So keep your eyes peeled.
Yeah.
All right?
Yeah. We'll have more news soon.
We will.
Things are altering, but in a good way. It's nice. It's all fun. Peter, do you have a question?
I've got a question here. It's from Michael Milan, who says, "Hello, BAP. The Library of Congress recently announced that the theme to Super Mario Bros. Will be the first video game track to enter the National Recording Registry. What other tunes do you think should be entered next?" Thank you, Michael. I've got a little bit of a write-up here from The Guardian. The original 1985 theme from Super Mario Bros., as well as Mariah Carey's All I Want for Christmas Is You, and Madonna's 1984 album, Like a Virgin, are among the, quote, defining sounds of the nation's history and culture to be given a place in the U.S. National Recording Registry, the Library of Congress has announced. The Super Mario Bros. Music, officially known as the Ground Theme, written by the young Nintendo composer Koji Kondo, becomes the first music from a video game to enter the registry, which the library called the most recognizable video game theme in history. The tune has appeared in countless Mario-related incarnations.
How does it go, Ashton?
See, she's still with it.
Yeah, she added a few extra notes, but the spirit was there.
I got a bit lost in the middle there. Sorry.
Yeah,
I kind of wasn't sure if I was gonna stop, and then I just kept.
What's
going
to happen? You can just transition into a completely different song.
Yeah,
I think it's nice that there's lots of non-US stuff going into this because the rest of the article was saying things like I think there's an album from The Police going in there.
Yeah,
Led Zeppelin's Stairway to Heaven is going in there. And things that's not. I think that's sensible, you know, because it's snapshots
human
of
history.
Yeah, snapshots of popular culture at certain times.
Yeah,
it's good.
I think there's two schools of thought to answer this question.
Right. Yeah. So do I.
I think there's whether you go down the iconic songs, like songs that everyone who hears them is like, "Wow, that's a great song," or you go for songs that have made an impact culturally, which I think is different than iconic songs.
Mm-hmm.
I have one for each because I think there's one that's made a big cultural impact, but it's not necessarily the most iconic song in video gaming.
Right. Yeah. My two schools of thought are very similar to that in that, like, it's either something like the Mario theme where even your grandma possibly knows it. Certainly your mum does. Mm-hmm. I know your mum and she definitely knows the Mario theme.
Say hello to your mum.
Yeah.
Versus, you know, what's the best video game music, which is not necessarily what they want to be putting in the national flipping whatever it's called.
Recording registry.
Yeah.
You know, it's more about, it has to be something that pretty much everyone's going to recognize or has significance to everyone. So the answer isn't necessarily, the question isn't necessarily what's the best video game music. It is more what's the most iconic or recognizable. I think Tetris maybe falls into the latter category.
I made a note about that.
Right.
Because the Tetris theme is actually, it's another song. It's not just the Tetris theme.
Mm.
And this isn't me going, actually, I just thought it was really interesting.
Right.
So if you allow me to chime in.
Yeah.
It is. It's a 19th century Russian folk song, I've written, folk song.
Right.
Called Koro Beniki.
Well, there you go.
They have it.
If you play it chiptune, it's Tetris.
It's the Tetris theme.
Yeah. So I think that might be the best candidate for what their criteria probably are. Whereas my criteria, or if there was a sort of a separate registry for specifically video game music where that's already a prerequisite, then you could start throwing in things like Still Alive from Portal.
Yeah. Yes.
You could put various things by Jeremy Soule in there. Mm-hmm. You could, the police could be double title holders because you could put Stuart Copeland in there with Spyro. Yeah. Mm-hmm. That's more of a personal choice. It's not necessarily the best soundtrack of all time. But so all sorts really is possible if you sort of widen it to, hey, if you're a video game, you're great. You can come in and let's just pick some good ones rather than does your mum know it? Ashton?
Every song has to pass the does your mum know it?
Yeah.
You're an expert on mums.
Yeah.
What's your answer?
So my first song, which I think is an iconic, not an iconic song, a cultural shift song. Mums do know it, but not because it's in the game.
Okay.
I personally think that like a cultural shift in video games was This Girl Is On Fire from the end of Borderlands 3.
Oh my God.
Okay.
Mums know it. Mums love it.
I hate that
song, what was that about?
That was such a strange ending.
Such a video game historical moment that I just feel like we don't talk about enough.
Mm-hmm.
In that everyone who played that game and got to that point, there was a universal moment of what is happening?
I definitely talked about it on the podcast at the time, but me and my friend who played through it in co-op, we just burst out laughing.
Yeah, so did we.
Like, what? What?
Like something was like bit, has happened and you've, you know, a character that you care about, is something happens to them and you're suddenly affronted by Alicia Keys and you're like, what? Why is this happening? What's happening?
Because it was meant to be like this impactful, sort of kind of somber moment. And then they were like, it's time for girl power. It's girl power time.
Yeah, absolutely.
It's never been less fitting.
Yeah, hasn't it? So I think that just like as a historical moment should definitely go in the national recording.
if you start doing stuff that's alright, it was already pop music. There are some good candidates. You could do like Mad World, which was in that trailer for
Halo
War.
Gears of War. Was it Halo? Which is the Halo one that had the...
Yeah, with the figures.
Yeah, I think toys. That was Halo.
Yeah, I think Mad World was Gears of War.
It's one of them. Yeah. Don't know.
And Xbox. Then the other song I think you should put in there, just because it's a great song, and I think everyone who plays this game would be like, oh yeah, whenever they hear it, it gives them the good feel, the good feels. Mm-hmm. The Final Fantasy VII main theme is pretty great. Also, I think a lot of the Kingdom Hearts music is pretty iconic in terms of people who've played those games recognize them instantaneously.
Mm-hmm.
I think, Final Fantasy or Kingdom Hearts games would be great. But personally, I think they should add This Girl Is On Fire from Borderlands 3. And it shouldn't be like, oh, just Alicia Keys. It should be from Borderlands 3. Yeah, and it should be enshrined with the like ending cinematic as well, just to...
With no context.
With no context. You just get the last like 5 minutes of the game and then you get that song and that's what you get. And iconic moments from history. Borderlands 3 ends.
Mm-hmm. It was Gears of War.
Right.
But then there's also a lot of responses for Halo Mad World as well. So I don't...
Maybe they both used that.
No idea. Song. No idea. It's such a catchy, uplifting tune.
Yeah.
You know what? I just put a load of songs I thought were nice.
Mm.
And some of them I would consider iconic. Some of them I just think are very nice.
Mm-hmm.
And I would recommend everyone go and listen. I believe this is on Spotify maybe and some other places. The greatest video game music as performed by the London Philharmonic Orchestra. Mm-hmm. I had that album and I listened to it a lot. And when I was looking up some music to get an answer for this question, that popped up. And I basically just looked at the track list and went, oh yeah, yeah, oh. Yeah, that. Oh,
agree,
you know what?
I
that
agree.
One's actually really good as well. So the not the Final Fantasy VII theme, but just the Final Fantasy theme that's in all of the Final Fantasy games, mm-hmm. but like slightly different. That's an iconic one. Aerith's theme from Final Fantasy VII. It's a very iconic piece of music. Persona 5, Last Surprise. Why is that not in there? That's the best video game music ever made.
They'll never see it coming.
They'll never see it come. Exactly. the Mass Effect 2 Suicide Mission. Fantastic piece of music that ramps up and basically sounds like a track from Doctor Who, the apex of it. The Elder Scrolls theme, that's a very good one. GTA 4, Soviet Connection. I think that's my favorite GTA theme song. It's
don't
really,
know
really
by
good.
Name, but...
it's the dun 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 dun.
Oh yeah,
dun, 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 that one.
Can I ask you a question quickly?
Yes.
What GTA game is it where he goes, oh, here we go again?
San Andreas.
When I was at the pool the other day, that song started playing and I was like, this is from GTA, and I was convinced, but no one else seemed to.
The San Andreas
and
theme.
It had that bit at the beginning of it, and I was like, this is from GTA, and I was like, what's going on? Am I
weird?
Yeah, it was really weird.
That's very strange.
But no one seemed to be reacting to it apart from me, so I was a bit confused.
It's not a piece of music you would sort of just listen to for
fun,
is
it? It was weird. That's weird, vibes.
Well, did you have sunstroke?
Yeah.
Was this real?
Just lying there in 42 degree heat, and you can hear,
I'm like, wow, oh,
no flip. Here we go.
No water in her body, just gin.
Just gin.
I've also got Nathan Drake's theme from Uncharted.
That's good.
The Legend of Zelda theme. That's an iconic one.
Iconic, yeah.
And then I put the Tetris theme as well. So there's a few.
Halo main theme is a great one.
Yeah.
There's a lot of really good main
I thought I put that one down, but I have not. Yeah, there's flipping tons, but there's a handful. Video game music's the best, man.
Yeah.
It's just such a shame that we can't celebrate it on the channel by like playing it, because then we'll get copyright struck into oblivion because we live in a hellscape.
Lists of like best soundtracks and stuff.
Yeah, we just can't do them.
No. Yeah. We can talk about them.
There's a, I think it's an hour, I think it might be a weekly segment for about an hour on Classic FM called High Score or High Scores, where they just play video game music.
They've got a Hall of Fame, haven't they? The Classic FM Video Game Hall of Fame. I think so. Yeah, they have a lot of stuff. They do a lot of work for video game scores, which is nice.
Yeah.
So there we are. It's time for something a little bit new. Ashton, you can read this one because we did this for the first time last week when you were also here.
Yeah.
You have to fly by seat your pants, just work out what it is based on context.
I think it's called What We Playin'.
Yes. It's What We Playin' time to talk about the games what we have been playing. Peter Austin, what have you been playing?
I played a few things this fortnight because I wasn't here last week. I have probably, first and foremost, let's say, to quote the tweet that I put out pretty much word for word, against all odds, I have rolled credits on Star Wars Jedi Survivor.
I saw your tweet.
You did not have a good time with that.
No, not really. Not technically speaking. I was. I quite liked the story. I think the thing about both of those games is that I do feel like there's a bit of busy work story-wise, where particularly early on in Survivor, there were a few levels where you're kind of just trying to get to, like, over there, like way over there kind of thing. Mm-hmm. You like walk out, there's a vista. He says, oh, we need to get over there. Todd Howard's in your ear going, you can actually get to that mountain. You can actually walk up to that mountain. And then you are just flipping around trying to get to the mountain. Mm-hmm. And I don't know, like, I preferred the levels where I was dropped into like an Imperial base or whatever, and it's like make your way through the corridors, which I guess is still ultimately just you trying to get to
over there.
You're going.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
And I guess in most video games, really, you're just trying to get over there. But there was something about the massive wide open wilderness levels where in both games, the first one as well, I just kind of felt like, yeah, okay, when I finally get there, I'm going to have a bit of story progression, and then I'm just going to be wandering again for another half an hour. So that I didn't like so much, but as I've said, I think every time I've spoken about this game on previous podcasts, I've enjoyed just being a Jedi and being able to like dash through the air and flip around and do some nice sort of traversal and stuff like that. So that was all great. And although I saw part of the twist coming, in so much as who was involved in the twist, I saw that happening. I didn't really see the kind of the other components of it, and I just don't want to be too spoilery, but so I was still sort of surprised, even though I saw one of the aspects of the sort of third act coming. I really enjoyed the last sort of third of the game, but unfortunately, probably in the entirety of me playing it, it must have crashed maybe like 7 or 8 times.
Oh, that's no good.
And the frame rate was not stable, even though I had it in performance mode. And I had a few other just like little glitches as well here and there. So I didn't have a great time. And it meant that like all I wanted to do was finish the game before it sort of crashed again. Like I just wanted to do as much as I could before it broke down on me, which meant that I, apart from when the game leads you in there on like one or maybe two occasions, I never ever set foot in the saloon in the entire game. I just decided not to. I'm not doing this. I don't have the time or the patience.
To be fair, it takes ages to load going in and out.
Right.
So with the way it was running on your console, there's a good chance they would have crashed there every time.
So I never went into the saloon apart from when I had to. I never spoke to a single NPC on Kobo apart from the ones I had to. Mm-hmm. And, you know, there's the whole meme about, I don't even know his name because he wasn't in my game very much. What's the frog boy called?
Turgle.
Yeah.
There was the cutscene where he's introduced and all that stuff's happening. And then about, I don't know, 3/5 of the way through the game, he appears very briefly where he's like, oh, thank God you're back. And those are the only two times I saw Turgle, mm-hmm. pretty much. So I've not really had the thorough, full kind of experience.
Maybe you had like the best experience because you didn't encounter Turgle.
Possibly.
Yeah. Your nightmares are free.
Yeah, maybe. Turgle. Maybe. So, yeah, I unfortunately just don't, at the moment anyway, have the desire to go and sort of mop up any of the other bits and bobs. So I stopped and smelled the roses as much as I could when I was out doing my adventures. So if I saw chests and things that were like clearly secret paths, I would go off down those and try and collect like the little force balls and stuff like that. But I didn't do any sort of actual side quests. The other thing I've played, since last week when I wasn't here, I've played some more Pete's Gauntlet in my own time, which is the Spyro 1 mod that someone has brought out where it randomizes all the levels and gives you weird abilities and stuff. That's super fun. And I'm just sort of enjoying playing that in my own time now and then. And then yesterday, weirdly, Kat, our writer, posted a clip of Burnout 3 in Slack because it was just a video she'd found and she was like making a joke about it. And sitting and watching that, I just thought, man, I love Burnout 3. So last night, I hooked up my PS2 and played some Burnout 3.
Nice.
So
nice.
Had a good time doing that. So that's what I've been playing. And now I'm looking for a new game to play on my PS5. So maybe Chia. Don't know. We'll see.
Good idea.
Ashton, what have you been playing?
Nothing.
Nothing? You've been away?
I haven't played nothing.
No, fair enough.
I played
GTA San Andreas in your dreams.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. I bought my DS with me. We bought the Switch with us. Ben had like 6 other little handheld consoles that he had to get out of his bag at customs, which was really fun. And I didn't play a single thing. I spent this week reading a book.
Oh, yeah, you read your book.
Oh, yeah, how'd you get on?
I finished my
book. Oh, my God,
I'm not made a big deal about this, but I'm really proud of myself that I finished this book.
I saw your story on Instagram where you were like, don't tell me how much book I've still got left to read.
No, and
like,
then I won't read the rest of the book. But I finished my book. Mm-hmm. And I said last week that I had a goal to read it before I turn 26, and I'm not even turned 25 yet. So
whoa,
that's incredible. Are you going to read another book, or is that
I've downloaded the second one in the series, but I'm very much aware that I'm back to real life now where there's like 100 other things to do.
Right.
So I'm not sure if I'm ever going to finish it, but I have another holiday probably before next year. So hopefully.
Could read 2 books.
Read another book then.
I could read two books. But that's all I did. Just read books. Finished it yesterday when we were at the pool. And yeah.
What book was it?
It's called A Court of Thorns and Roses.
Okay.
It's a fantasy book. Mm-hmm. It's a bit sexy.
Wow. How sexy was it in the end? Because you said actually, there was like mild sex.
Not as sexy. Apparently they get sexier as the more books you read.
Wow.
There was only, I think, maybe like 1 or 2 bits of sexy. Oh, the rest of it was like fantasy intrigue and drama.
Mm. That's not as fun, is it?
No.
But next time though.
Next fun.
See, you got motivation to
I already started reading the
second
one. And there was already within the first 5%. Sexy, so
brilliant.
So, yeah.
You extrapolate that up, it's just going to be wall to wall.
Wall to wall.
The
sex.
Last book is just sex just for 8
sex.
Hours of reading
yeah.
with like just one scene of political intrigue
yeah.
where they stop for a breather and they're like, yeah. they get their phone out and they're like, oh, Trump's been impeached. Oh,
anyway,
back to sex.
Yeah, but I've not played a single thing this week. So, what have you played?
How liberating.
I know.
That's nice.
I didn't even play mobile games.
Whoa.
What about your fashion?
Yeah.
I didn't even play it. I picked up for the first time on the plane yesterday.
Oh, no.
That's how much I was enjoying my book. How crazy is that? That's
that
pretty
is,
crazy.
That is crazy. Are we
going
to have
to
change the entire trajectory of the channel to be a book channel? Mm.
Yeah.
I don't even know what...
For my one book I've read.
For the one... Well, now you're an expert. You know, when was the last time Peter read a book? Probably never, right?
2 days ago.
Exactly. Yeah. See, like, it doesn't even count.
No.
So
no.
There we are. I played a few things. I started Oxenfree 2 because that is now out and that's very exciting. Definitely feels like more Oxenfree, mm-hmm. which isn't a bad thing because I loved the first Oxenfree. I simply have not had the time to go back to it, though. And I'm looking forward to dedicating more time to basically just finish it because I can't imagine it's that long considering the first game was beatable. In one sitting, reasonably. So hopefully I can finish that off. But it's so far it's set on an island very close to the original island. And there seems to be maybe some sort of the amnesia stuff going on. I'm not entirely sure because you play as the same character, but she doesn't seem to have any memory of what came before. And so that's not built to anything yet. And I am intrigued and I want to know what's going on. And it's like just leaned right into the spooky weirdness immediately, which was quite fun. Sort of like your smut books.
Yeah.
Now, in the second game, it's just like the first 5%, just like boo. And how many more boobies? Well, yeah, for your book, yeah. But there are no boobies in this one yet. So looking forward to playing more of that. I played some more Final Fantasy 16. I'm starting to understand the viewpoint now of people who have said that it doesn't really feel like a Final Fantasy game. I don't think that's a bad thing, to be clear, because I'm still really liking it. I think the combat's fantastic. But it was only when I entered combat and they introduced a new mechanic where they said, oh, by the way, some like sorcerers may cast like barrier on some of your enemies, and you're going to need to use a special ability to cut through that. And it made me realize, oh yeah, Final Fantasy used to have like tons of status effects and spells you could do, like to slow and stop and all this stuff, you know, to stop people from doing magic and so on and so forth. And it was just in that moment that sort of a light switch went off, and I realized, oh yeah, this is actually extremely different. This is very different. It's okay. I think it's good because I'm really liking it. But I am starting to understand that viewpoint now. And I can see why some people might not like it as much because it's not much like a traditional Final Fantasy game. But I'm still having a good time. So I'm going to keep playing it. Diablo 4 has also been played a little bit because that's just so easy to play. And I also played a bit of Loco Roco and kind of just mashed my way through a couple of levels and saved absolutely no blobs whatsoever because I'm not very good at it and I just want to jump until I get to the end of the stage, which is what I do. So there we are. That's what I've played.
Amazing.
Well, I think we've actually got a little something. I think I can see something just over there. Oh. We've got to do some traversal to get to it. It's time to head to Review Corner.
Oh.
Well, hello, everyone. Welcome to Review Corner. It's very lovely and cozy over here, isn't it, James?
Hello, Ashton. Yes, it is.
But surprisingly filled with dinosaurs.
Yeah, Jesus, who let all of these things in?
Bad boys
in? It's just a weird portal opened and there's just crap tons of them.
Yeah, James, you've been playing a game this week.
I have.
It's a dinosaur game. Little clue there.
Yeah.
Which one is it?
Love my dinosaur games. It's Exo Primal. So, yeah, this is available on Game Pass and I believe... well, I'll have to double check that, but I believe most other platforms, apart from maybe the Switch.
So, yeah.
Yeah, it's certainly an interesting thing. It's, hey, do you think that Overwatch could do with a few more dinosaurs?
Always. That's what I've always said.
Yeah,
I've always said that.
That's what I reckon. I mean, this is kind of that. I mean, in a way. Maybe a bit harsh, but...
Maybe, but I've heard other people say that before the game came out. Like early reviewers were saying it's basically Overwatch, but also with dinosaurs.
Yeah, it's a weird one. It's
But is it fun?
They tried to do a certain sort of unique thing, but yeah. Okay, well, is it fun is a question. I thought that it can be fun for a little bit of time, but I also think there's a lot of missed opportunities is the short takeaway from this.
Right.
So basically, it is a PvPvE game. You know, one of those popular things where you've got like, you're playing two teams against hordes of dinosaurs, basically. You've got different classes or exosuits in this case. And like a lot of these things, you can swap out at any time, not even between like lives. You just swap out whilst you're in the action. All of them have different abilities and uses, an ultimate power, a few other like, you know, sort of smaller abilities and whatnot.
Yeah, your typical like class based.
Yeah, and they're all sort of situation. Yeah, and they're like split up into, you know, sort of damage dealing, tank, and healer classes. And I think there's about like what, 3, 6, 8, and then one extra that's like you got to pay for in each one. So yeah, the Overwatch comparisons are kind of like forgiven there because it's very, very similar there. Basically, there's only one game mode, but the whole point is like so it's split into two phases. It's kind of a weird setup, really. But the first phase is like you follow a set path with your team. I think it's like up to 5 on a team. You kill some dinos, and there are a lot of dinos. We'll get into that. And it's quite impressive in some respects. Or you defend a spot by killing all the dinos. Basically, that's your first phase. You've got to kill a lot of dinos, and you've got to do it faster than the other team. And then in the second round, whoever gets, you know, ahead first gets a little bit of a bonus. And the second round is similar to, I think, an Overwatch game mode or Team Fortress 2. You've got to, like, stick near an objective and sort of push it forward.
Right, okay.
Essentially. And then, you know, a few sort of obstacles, again, dinosaur-related obstacles pop up. And then the PvP aspect seems to only happen at the end of the second round,
right,
or towards the second half of that. And yeah, you know, first person to the end wins. It's yeah, it's a weird setup. And
so you're not kind of like fighting the whole way through, like with kind of, not to compare it so much to Overwatch, but with sort of like Capture the Flag or like the ones where you have to push through with that big robot thing.
Yeah,
you have to fight the entire way through to try and go back and forth. But is it just literally like, you're doing your own thing and then suddenly there's other people also?
It's, yeah, it's basically it. And that's one of my gripes against that, because it almost, the game almost doesn't seem to know what it wants to be in that sense.
Yeah.
And yeah, like a lot of it isn't PvP. Like I think on stream when I played it, stream's available on VOD's channel. Yeah, it's... I was trying to find opportunities to find other people, and it just wasn't possible unless I missed something obvious in that sort of first round of each game.
Mm-hmm.
And then, you know, towards the end, you get a bit of PvP, but it feels very... And the actual PvP is interesting. It seemed a little bit more exciting, but I can't tell whether that's just in comparison to fighting off, you know, waves of
dinosaurs,
AI dinos, yeah. Which again was fun for a little bit, but yeah, I think my main gripe is that both sides of this game does seem repetitive after not too long, and obviously
there
there's only
like
one game mode and stuff, yeah,
maps but and stuff like to mix up the.
So
there's one game mode. And it's fight dinosaurs for two rounds and then fight each other at the end to win, basically.
That's
and then,
it,
is there maps
much.
To mix that up at all?
Well, I'm not sure how many different maps. I'm pretty sure there was at least two, but that's another interesting thing. So, like, because of the setup, you've got to follow that set path. The maps almost seem redundant. Like, you're not really exploring very much, and half of the objectives seem to be, like, defend this zone anyway. And one time when I did sort of try and explore a bit more of the map, it was like, you're going too far away from the combat zone. We will warp you back. It's like, for God's sake, why design a whole map when you're not going to show half of it? I think the paths through the maps with each game vary, so you will see that over multiple games. But it's, and even with the PvP at the end, it only happens when, because you each have your own individual things to push, whatever they are, and then it's only towards the end it feels like you're just shooting down a corridor with like maybe one or two different avenues, and it's
weird,
very very strange setup.
It almost doesn't feel like the game's like finished. It feels like there should be more.
Exactly. Yeah.
Like, this why isn't there just a player versus dinosaur like wave based mode? Why isn't there just PvP mode? Why is there just one?
Well, that is one of many questions I've had. You're right. It's very unusual. I mean, to be fair, you can select whether you want a PvP element in there or whether it just wants to be PvE with the game mode before you start.
Mm-hmm.
But that is, I don't know, it feels like the PvE isn't strong enough to carry it on its own. So just a little bit about like the characters themselves. Like, the different roles can be fun. Like, I'm not saying it's not amazing. It can be fun for a little time. And it's all very flashy. And some of the abilities are like, it's nothing too out there. You know, you got one, your tank people can either put up a big barrier like your old mate on Overwatch. Or, I haven't played Overwatch, really. And, you know, like another one has like a big dome thing. You've got healers that can, you know, heal. Or you've got like a variety of damage dealers. That's one's melee class, one's, melee and very fast. One is sort of shooty, one's grenade and explosives. There's some variety there and they do look pretty flashy. But it feels like there's something missing. It feels a little bit soulless and whatnot. So, and because you don't get a lot of the PvP action in there until the end, it feels like some of those abilities are maybe... You don't have to really think too much about doing the dino killing aspects.
Yeah.
On the dinosaur aspect, actually, it's interesting. So like a lot of the sort of press release stuff there and trailers and stuff showed a waves of raptors, and that's quite impressive tech. It's pretty cool to like be fighting off those waves upon waves of raptors like at the start. You've got other things that show up. You've got T-Rexes. You've got Carnotaurus, which is like a tiny mini Rex sort of thing. you've got Pteranodons. You've got Triceratops. All that sort of stuff. So there's a bit of variety, but it's not really that much in terms of you don't have to adopt many different tactics. Essentially, you're just shooting them. And yeah, so that's another thing that seems like a missed opportunity. One thing I should mention is so they have another couple of like minor features that don't pop up enough. So you can like put down little barriers or turrets and stuff. And you can also have a pickup where you can control a dinosaur and set it loose on the enemy team to slow them down. That was probably the coolest part of the game. And it makes me sad that they haven't, made more of a big thing about that. Because it's only a pickup. It's kind of like, you think like Star Wars Battlefront, the newer games where it's like you can only be the really cool Jedi or Darth Vader if you get this one pickup amongst, 64 players. So it's, there's that thing. The other thing that this game does kind of weirdly is there's a story here and it's insane. I couldn't really explain it to you beyond the basics.
But I watched the very beginning of the game yesterday and it was the story was already convoluted before we even got into the game. I think the basic premise is there's this thing called the Leviathan that's like dropping dinosaurs AI to test the exoprimals suit people. Exosuit gang. In a game like this, by the sounds of things, the story is essentially pointless and just for funsies.
It's the game inherently is kind of silly just by its concept anyway. So the story is a weird one where it's like, it's clearly silly. It's clearly not taking itself seriously, but then sometimes it is.
Right.
And basically, as you said, you pretty much know about the same amount of story as I do, having watched the thing, and I'm still confused. I think at one point, you're training against a real threat, but then at one point you get sent back in time or something. I don't know. The other thing is like it's the way it's sort of integrated because like it crams a lot of story right at the start. And then that's another thing as well. It's a bit of a faff starting up because you have to link up a Capcom ID, which is just, why are you doing this? Come on. that was a lot of faff. And then you've got to sit through like what felt like 20, 30 minutes of story, which for something that seems designed like an arcade-y, drop in and play with your mate sort of thing, feels a bit like it's a big roadblock to actually get into the game.
Yeah.
But the story itself, they've clearly put a lot of effort into it. As you sort of progress through your one game mode, you basically, build up progress towards the next chunk of the story.
Is there a season pass? Is there like an idea that they're going to add more in? Because it reminds me of like Splatoon 3, where they're like, this month's game mode and maps are this, and then there's new stuff, but...
Well, that's good. That's immediately a benefit because game modes plural. But
that's Splatoon. I don't know.
Yeah. But it is unfortunately there's a game pass. There's a season pass. There are some loot boxes and some cosmetics and stuff, which I suppose it's would be more forgiving if a lot of people expected to play on Game Pass. If you actually dropped money on it, it's kind of annoying. And again, some games can do this approach right. Mm-hmm. This feels like there's not much incentive to do that. Mm-hmm. It's very much like I think they are going to keep supporting it. And, I hope they do because there's a lot of, like, potential in there. And it can be fun at times, that's the thing. But, I just want to say with the story as well, it has this the most ridiculous way of, like, setting it up. One of the options on the main menu, you go to this bizarre, again, convoluted story wheel thing, and it's a lot of different things coming out. I just want to replay the cutscene so I can actually maybe understand what the hell's going on. And you've got to decipher all of this nonsense. That was kind of silly as well, but
well, there we have it. Exoprimal has potential, but is definitely not finished in terms of the content yet.
This is the thing. I just think that there's if they are going to improve it, it'll be interesting. It could be interesting at least, but it feels like they should have either focused on the PvE, make that more varied, or, you know, tighten up that balance between that and the PvP.
Yeah.
Different game modes. The exosuits aren't really that interesting either. There's not a lot of, like, you know, personality with them, where, you know, that's the big sort of one of the big selling points of games like Overwatch and Team Fortress and whatnot. So it's like, yeah, it's on Game Pass, so it is worth a try if you're looking for something, you know, maybe a little bit mindless, and it is fun. It'll probably be quite fun to you know, play with a group of friends, you know. But overall, don't expect too much. Maybe keep an eye on it for the future. But yeah.
Thanks, James.
Thank you very much.
Let's head back over to the regular podcast, shall we?
Oh, gotta go. Bye.
And now it's time for question two, which comes from Dan Clapper. Hey, Bap, what are your thoughts on the replacement of Xbox Live Gold with Game Pass Core this week? Is it all too confusing? Should we just not have to pay a subscription for multiplayer access anymore? Well, Dan, I've got a little write-up here. Thank you so much for asking the question. This is from Eurogamer. The link will be in the dump. Microsoft has officially killed off its long-running Xbox Games with Gold offering and lifted the lid on its replacement, Xbox Game Pass Core. Xbox Game Pass Core makes its debut on the 14th of September, and is described by Microsoft as the evolution of Xbox Live Gold. For the same price of £7, $10 a month, or £40, $60 a year, Game Pass Core includes online gaming and a select collection of over 25 games to play with friends around the world. This will grow over time. Game Pass Core brings online play together with Game Pass and a new offering for gamers around the world, Microsoft said. This new offering from Xbox places games with gold. We wanted to use the opportunity to reimagine how to include content with this subscription. We found the answer to the most compelling catalogue was to leverage select titles from our Xbox Game Pass catalogue, Microsoft explains. Things like Dishonored 2 and Hellblade was on there, Among Us. I think you have a full list.
We got Among Us, Descenders, Dishonored 2, Doom Eternal, Fable Anniversary, Fallout 4, Fallout 76, Forza Horizon 4, Gears 5, Grounded, Halo 5 Guardians, Halo Wars 2, Hellblade Senua's Sacrifice, Human Fall Flat, Inside, Ori and the Will of the Wisps, Psychonauts 2, State of Decay 2, and The Elder Scrolls Online Tamriel Unlimited.
Indeed. Game Pass Core will launch multiple titles on Xbox Studios included. More games will be released on the service following its launch 2 or 3 times a year. Anyone who's already a member of Xbox Live Gold will automatically become a Game Pass Core member on the 14th of September with no change in pricing. The games with gold will close on the 1st of September. Users will be able to access any Xbox One games with redeemed through service providing with the Game Pass membership. That I just did not say any words then. That's fine. You can still play games that you've already got. I can't read anymore.
That's fine. I think you did
you
a very good
it,
job.
Right? You got it, right?
You did a great job, actually.
Well done.
I don't know. I've seen a few people say online that, like, oh, this is a bit confusing, isn't it? And there's, like, so much to go at now. And, you know, it's like PlayStation. There's just so many tiers and I don't know what's going on. I don't think it's necessarily that confusing. I think it's it would be nice for both Sony and Microsoft to just offer, like, hey, here is a thing you can sign up to that is just you now have access to online play. You don't have to, like, you know, we'll remove the whatever value we place on this list of games that you can play that comes bundled with it. It's a bit like how I feel about Amazon Prime. I don't want to have to, can I pay less, please, and just get free shipping on stuff? Mm-hmm. You know, I don't want to be paying for video and God
knows
what else.
You don't want to watch The Boys?
I don't want to watch
The
Boys.
You don't want to watch The Lord of the Rings?
There's
no.
There's so many Hallmark movies on there.
So many.
How about Supernatural? That's crap, and yeah. I'm slowly watching all of it.
It has got a Twitch sub, though, which you can spend on us.
You can.
Amazon.something, I don't know. But, yeah, I think that it would be nice if Sony and Microsoft just said, like, hey, you can just pay, like, a really low fee per year, preferably nothing. It would be nice if you could just play online for free, but whatever. I guess they have to, you know, look after their servers and stuff, make money, business. But yeah, that would be a nice option. But, you know, the fact that they've said, hey, here's a thing where you can have online access and there's a bunch of games thrown in that you can play if you want to, I'm okay with it. And I don't know if you two are feeling that this is a kind of a confusing move or a bad move, but I have seen a few people online saying, like, what's going on? And I don't really agree.
Dun, 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 right?
Indeed.
Axel
yeah.
F.
Yeah. It was the crazy frog. I follow him on
you
Twitter.
Got him. I don't think it's that confusing. However, I do think it is unnecessary and weird. I think that it's the same thing with PlayStation Plus in that it's like, yeah, cool, you can play online, but also here's just some games that if you want them, if you fancy them. And I do feel like, I don't know if we're in a time where we need to be paying for online gaming, what, abilities. I think that it's just unnecessary. Most games nowadays come with like inbuilt sign up to our specific version of online game mode. Like, you know, Overwatch has their own like login. What's it called? I don't know. I can't remember. There's a name for it. And like everywhere seems to have their own thing to sign up to. So why do I also have to be paying Sony for the privilege of using my own internet? Doesn't make sense, does it? If you, I have a question, I don't know if you guys know this. If you have an online game like Call of Duty and you've paid for the game, can you still not play online on PlayStation if you haven't got PlayStation Plus?
Yes.
Yeah.
You, as in, you, yeah, you can't play, but you can play free-to-play games.
Yes.
Yeah.
Okay. So yeah, it's just kind of, I feel like it's unnecessary. I recently accidentally paid for Nintendo Online again. I didn't mean to. I forgot to cancel it. And I just don't feel like these games offer enough. Like, there's not enough games, for, especially for Nintendo, where I feel like you need to play online. And I do feel like it's not necessary for anyone to have to pay to play online anymore. I think that's just ridiculous. If you wanted to give people a selection of games for like a cheaper price, like what PlayStation used to do with Now and then became whatever PlayStation Plus is now, I feel like it's fine to be like, hey, if you want to pay a little extra, if you want to pay £3 a month, you can get just this selection of 25 games. And maybe we'll add some more, maybe we'll take some away as we go. It's like the PlayStation Plus collection. Mm-hmm. You can just pay for some of them, and then that's all you get. And you have to be happy with it. Oh, you just don't pay for it. And I just think it's kind of, it doesn't feel necessary to me. I don't feel like that enough people will be struggling to like, oh, no one's playing for PlayStation Live or Xbox Live anymore. Guess we'll have to put some games in. I don't feel like that's a thing. I think people are going to play for Xbox Live because they want to play online. But maybe they are sweetening the deal a little bit with some extra games. So I guess maybe it's nothing to complain about because you're getting some free games for it. But it just feels a bit weird. I don't know why we have to keep paying for online memberships anymore. There's so many ways of playing online without having to have these memberships. So it feels unnecessary is what I'm saying.
Mm.
I only play for PlayStation. I don't know why I play for PlayStation Plus, actually.
Well, that's why I don't anymore, because at the moment I don't play online.
No, I don't really play online very much at all. And I think I'm always subdued in with the 3 monthly games, thinking this month will be good, and then it never is. So, I don't know. I think it's not necessary, but chumps like me will just keep paying it because they keep forgetting that maybe one day I'll need it. Ridiculous. Anyway, what do you think, Ben?
I think it's obviously sad that Xbox Live is gone. And it's dead. At least the branding is dead, you know, because how long has that been now? I think since the launch of the original Xbox?
Decades, yeah.
Since like about 20 years now. Mm-hmm. That's very sad, you know, the end of an era. And I think from a branding perspective, it makes perfect sense for Xbox Live Gold to just become a tier of Game Pass, because why wouldn't you just have them all under the same umbrella? As someone who has, I think, maybe been subscribed to Xbox Live Gold for maybe 3 months of my entire life. And just being an outside observer, I think that the games with Gold were often not really up to snuff, even less so than PlayStation Plus, is monthly offerings that are often criticized. I think games with Gold was viewed as perhaps not really being that worth it. And it was essentially just a way for people to play online. And the whole Xbox ecosystem is so geared around subscriptions now, by design, that I would not be surprised that the only reason they are doing this is because it's what they have to set it as to justify including the games that they're going to include. And there's going to be a lot of really, really heavy, like, there's going to be a bombardment of advertising. Like, did you know that for, like, you know, £4 more a month, you could get access to all of the games in the Fallout series and not just 4 and 76, or all of the Halo games and not just, what was it, 5 and Halo Wars 2.
Dishonored 1, presumably, rather than
Exactly, Psychonauts 1, the other Ori game, that like the new Hellblade, that there'll be so much like, hey, you know, come in. The water's fine up here. Mm. It just, as much as anything else, it makes sense, as I said, for branding. But it's clearly a very calculated move to try and get as many people to up their tier. But I do agree that it would be really nice. It's not going to happen, as we all know, yeah. Unfortunately. It would be really nice to have either a free tier for just online, much like PlayStation and Nintendo used to be free. It's never been the case on Xbox. Or a very cheap tier. That doesn't include any free games, and it's literally just online access. Maybe you don't, for example, on PlayStation, get access to cloud saves and things that, mm-hmm. that are proper PlayStation Plus perks. Because I feel like with the shift, especially on Xbox and PlayStation, for it being less about paying for access to online functionality and more about access to free games and additional features for your consoles, that we're sort of in a state of shifting that's similar to how mobile phone contracts are, where texts and minutes used to demand a premium as yeah. part of your monthly package. Now you just get unlimited yeah. because they're worthless to you know, telecommunications companies. They're it's nothing to them. It's all about data and the additional bolt-on stuffs that, you know, maybe get some Apple TV with it, maybe get, you know, a laptop with it or whatever.
Disney as part Plus of your, I used to get with my phone.
Exactly. And I feel like we could very easily sort of have that with gaming as well. However, also with that analogy with phones, you can't just get a SIM where it's yeah. just where it's just free texts and minutes. You know, it's all part of a bigger thing. But it's still, I think, illustrative of the point that access to online isn't as important as it used to be as part of these subscription packages for video game systems. It's all about additional services and access to games. So it would be nice, you know, as you said, £3 a month for access to online. Mm. That'd be lovely. Yeah. I would consider that, but I do make good use of the cloud save functionality and mm-hmm. stuff. So, mm-hmm. but, and also then it might add also some more confusion where there's another tier
yeah.
available. Mm-hmm. I don't think it's that confusing personally.
Just call it PlayStation Online. Or here's a crazy idea. Yeah. Why don't you call it Xbox Live?
No, yeah. that's yeah. never been done before. but it is kind of sad to see the old branding go away because it's just been such a staple of the Xbox mm. ecosystem for so long.
I'll be honest, I didn't know that Xbox Live was still a thing. I just thought they smushed it into Game Pass, if I'm honest.
They just have not talked about Xbox Live Gold for the longest time.
Is when I saw like people in like Tesco where you can get like gift vouchers and it'd be like 12 months of Xbox Live Gold. That's the only time I've ever seen it.
It's all about Game Pass because you get access to online with Game Pass. So, yeah. So, you know, it's such a redundant feature unless you really do just want that. But the PlayStation Plus collection equivalent that Xbox is offering is good, and that will be good value for people. Depends how often they switch it out, but given the caliber of games that were in Games with Gold every month previously, I'd say that this is a really good selection. And if they update it, then there's a good chance that some people will never need to move on from that tier.
So. Yeah, that's true.
There we are.
Well, done something a bit strange, a bit unusual, a bit peculiar.
Yes.
Do you want to come up with a name for it, perhaps?
Odd?
Odd?
I think it'd be better if it sounded like weird news.
Oh. Ah.
Millions of people have lost weight with personalized plans from Noom, like Evan, who can't stand salads and still lost 50 pounds.
Salads generally for most people are the easy button, right? For me, that wasn't an option. I never really was a salad guy. That's just not who I am. But Noom worked for me.
Get your personalized plan today at Noom.com. Real Noom user compensated to provide their story. In 4 weeks, the typical Noom user can expect to lose 1 to 2 pounds per week. Individual results may vary.
Cool fact, a crocodile can't stick out its tongue. Also, you can get health insurance for a month or just under a year in some states. UnitedHealthcare short-term insurance plans, underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, offer flexible, budget-friendly coverage for you. Learn more at uh1.com. A lot can happen in 3 years, like a chatbot may be your new best friend. But what won't change? Needing health insurance. UnitedHealthcare tri-term medical plans, underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, offer flexible, budget-friendly coverage that lasts nearly 3 years in some states. Learn more at uh1.com.
It's weird news time. Time for some weird video game news. This, well, I've completely lost where I was going there, If you want, I'm back on track. If you want to get yourself a shout out and submit some weird news to us, you can do so on the social media posts that go out on Tuesdays. However, if you want to guarantee a shout out at this point in the podcast, you need to go to patreon.com/teamtriplejump, support us at a certain tier, and become a podcast producer. I saved it. Just like
G.Y. Goliath,
Nicole Hansen,
Duncan Wilson,
Katie Garrider Jared,
Ellie Nicholas,
Nexus Polaris,
Gabrielle Philippink,
Blake Thomas,
and Melody L. Bonnet.
Thanks, podcast producers.
Peter, do you have some weird news and whom is it from?
I've got some weird news here that was from @JohnnyMac13, Johnny Mac on Twitter. I don't think this was also submitted to the Facebook post. I did look, and then after I'd chosen this one from Facebook, from Twitter, I forgot to check where it was on Facebook as well.
Oh.
Whatever. Thank you if you sent it on Facebook. This is according to metro.co.uk. Game Central is the author. Wow. Oh. That's the person's name. It looks
born to do this.
Yes. No, that's the I forgot the headline. Baldur's Gate 3 has 17,000 endings and its cutscenes last 174 hours.
I don't believe you.
I have heard so much about Baldur's Gate 3 recently. Everyone is going wild for it.
You can shag bears.
You can have sex with bears, yeah.
17,000 endings.
Let's learn more about this, shall we? It looks like the new Dungeons & Dragons game from Larian Studios will end up the biggest RPG ever made, including in terms of cut space scenes, which I would say is all one word, personally.
Yeah, because otherwise it sounds like scenes that are cut.
Yeah. Yes. Considering 2017's Divinity Original Sin 2 lasted well over 60 hours, it's no surprise to find that the next game from Belgian developer Larian Studios is also enormous, almost incomprehensibly so, in fact. Following their recent panel from Hell showcase, in which they unveiled a sex scene between an elf vampire and a druid that turns into
bear.
A bear.
Just a bear.
Just a bear.
An elf
really.
Vampire and a bear. other details have emerged, including the fact that its script is three times the length of all three Lord of the Rings novels combined. That just gets longer and longer, doesn't
the hell?
It?
Too many. That's too many words.
That's only the script for the cutscenes alone, as well, not the whole game. With Larian stating that the cinematics last 174 hours, twice the length of the whole of the Game of Thrones TV show. You won't be seeing all those cutscenes in a single playthrough, though, says metro.co.uk. Thanks, Metro. As the game features a huge variety of different characters and branching plot points, so nobody is likely to watch them all outside of compilations on YouTube. Well, 174 hours worth. There's also no suggestion that
they take 2 months to upload it.
Yeah. There's also no suggestion that they are unusually long, just that there are an awful lot of them. Larian's also stated there are 17,000 different permutations for the ending of the game. These are referred to as variants, though, so a lot of those are implied to be more or less the same and different only dependent on the specific characters involved and decisions you made earlier in the game. Still, it's a huge number and suggests that Baldur's Gate 3 will overall be a much bigger game than Divinity Original Sin 2. It continues, but that's
the platinum
all we need
requires
to
you to see all 174 hours.
Can you imagine?
And get all 17,000 endings.
They bloomin' would, wouldn't they?
Yeah, they bloomin'
would. That's too many endings, I would say. I mean, admittedly, there's probably variants, so it's like this character's here this time, but you were mean to him last playthrough, so he's not
so he
here.
Says one different line of dialogue or whatever. But there you go.
Well,
that's
we had 1,000 planets. Now we've got 17,000 endings.
It's just too many.
I'm exhausted just hearing about it.
All the planets in Star Wars, some of the planets in Star Wars Outlaws are the size of, two or three zones from an Assassin's Creed game?
Oh, yeah, I saw that.
Yeah, that's pretty big.
When you multiply it by however many planets. Games are too big.
1,000 planets.
Yeah, 1,000.
1,000 planets. I have a news. It came from Paul Ansell on Facebook and Stephen Skodes on Twitter from Eurogamer by Matt Wales. There is an official Assassin's Creed Mirage haptic gaming suit on the way. Finally, you too can feel sensations.
Oh,
goodness.
If you've ever had the overwhelming desire to feel exactly what it would be like to shimmy up a wall in 9th century Baghdad, help is at hand. A company's just announced a haptic gaming suit that'll be compatible with and themed around the upcoming Assassin's Creed Mirage. Haptics firm OWO's Haptic firm OWO's Mirage-themed tie-in has been created in partnership with Ubisoft and looks something like an extremely snug short-sleeved shirt, albeit packaged alongside various bits of hardware. While wearing one, players can experience multiple different sensations and reflect those that reflect those of Assassin's Creed Mirage's protagonist, Basim. OWO says these sensations will include the likes of impacts and parkour. You can feel getting punched in real time. With the standard version of the haptic suit able to mimic 30 different sensations, including axe, insect bites, severe abdominal wound, and more.
Sounds great.
Can I have sex with a bear?
Yeah, and feel all of it.
Every movement.
On top of that, the Assassin's Creed Mirage version of the haptic suit promises to incorporate some exclusive sensations that never felt before, presumably such as the taste of a rainbow on a damp autumn evening and the icy touch of a dying king on the unseen edge of a distant black hole.
Jesus.
Yeah. Matt wanted to write a bit of someone's fantasy
using their English degree.
Yeah. The system includes a copy of Ubisoft's game for Xbox Series X/S, PS5 or PC, the main device, game pads, a storage pouch and charging cables, and the aforementioned shirt-like skin, which features an exclusive finish inspired by Basim's outfit that probably look quite stylish, minus the massive logo on the back, on anyone with dazzling pectoral muscles and a sheer six-pack. Expected to cost approximately $500 when it launches soon, which will probably be around the same time Assassin's Creed Mirage releases on the 12th of October. So you can feel axe, insect bite, severe abdominal wound.
Severe abdominal wound.
What about ball?
Edge of black hole.
You can feel ball.
Ball.
Feel ball.
One of the sensations is just ball.
Okay.
That doesn't make any sense.
I can feel that in real life. Why do I need a suit? 30
never before felt sensations.
Goodness.
Including
ball. Square. Triangle.
Something has just occurred to me. Do you think one of the 17,000 endings of Baldur's Gate 3 involves...
Baldur's Gate 3
involves the song This Girl Is On Fire?
I hope
Fingers
so.
Fingers crossed.
That would be a good ending.
Otherwise, why are we even doing this?
Yeah, what's the point?
Game's already peaked in 2019. There's no point.
This girl is on fire.
I have some weird news from Ariel_Kent and Baffled Spectator, and thank you to everybody else who sent this as well. This is from Dextero, written by Cassidy Stevenson. Cassidy has written a headline that says, FBI used Nintendo Switch to find missing child 2,000 miles away. Here we go. The FBI was able to locate a missing child after she connected her Nintendo Switch to Wi-Fi on the... This is... Trigger warning, this is upsetting, you know, because of abduction and stuff. On August the 3rd, 2022, 28-year-old Ethan Roberts allegedly took a 15-year-old girl, who remains anonymous, from her Virginia home. Now she has been, thankfully, found 2,000 miles away in Arizona. Excuse me. According to reports, the child met Roberts on the internet and he traveled to Virginia to visit. However, he allegedly forced her into... Ooh, there's some horrible stuff.
Okay.
Luckily, the FBI was able to locate the abducted child based on her Nintendo Switch activity. As first reported by ABC 15 Arizona, federal court records show Roberts allowed the girl to bring her Nintendo Switch. After she connected to the internet to watch YouTube or download a game, her friend quickly noticed the activity.
Mm.
It continues like that, but I was quite thrown by the harrowing nature of this whole situation. It is fantastic that she's been found. Really, really
impressive of her friend to be like, see her name pop up and be
online. Hey. She's missing. She's online. Yeah.
It's kind of amazing, isn't it? And a little bit weird as well. That was weird. The method that they managed to find her by. So
weird that like... he would let her bring that.
Yeah, I mean, stupid. I mean, merciful that that happened, but
glad he
really
did.
Stupid of him.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah, terrible. Way worse than I was expecting.
Good job that guy's going to prison.
I heard that news story spoken about on another podcast, and they did not include the detail that I just had to skip over because that was quite horrible. But glad she has been found and is safe and sound. Mm-hmm. So,
yeah.
There we are.
Brilliant.
It's time, everybody, for the big big discussion. Ooh. It's big discussion time. Time for the big video game discussion. This week it comes courtesy of Ed Hoik. Have you ever worked out how to pronounce Ed's last name? Because I feel like I've asked him on streams before and he's probably corrected me. But
I think you're right.
Hoik.
Hoik. Yeah.
Thing is, we ask for clarification on names, and then because we have to do it that often and there are that many of you, I forget.
Yeah,
and
me
so
too.
There'll be people in my chat where I'm like, oh no, I know I've asked them before how you say their name. Katie Garrett / Jarrett's probably told us more than once.
Oh, absolutely. Yeah, absolutely. But Hoik, you have to say it like that.
Yeah.
There's someone who pops into my streams, may well be yours as well, called Chip Thompson. And every time I see him, I call him Chris because I just read Chip as Chris.
I think I've also
done that. It's Chris Thompson. No, yeah. It's not. I just happens to know someone called Chris Thompson. His name is Chip.
Right.
Sorry, Chris. So here we are. This is the question from Ed Hoik. Hi, ABAP. The National Center for Gaming Disorders was created in 2020 and expected to see 30 clients a year. They've had more than 850 so far. The accounts reported in The Guardian are harrowing. What experiences has the team had with addictive behavior while gaming, and what solutions do you see with this problem? Thank you, Ed.
I've got
a fair amount of context now, so yes. Strap in, because we want to do this justice. Mm. This is according to The Guardian and Rob Davies. More than 850 people have been referred to a clinic for video gaming addicts, as experts warn the UK is not doing enough to tackle gambling-style features in games on mobile phones and consoles. The National Centre for Gaming Disorders, NCGD, which had its first patient in 2020, was originally given NHS funding based on seeing just 50 people a year. But the specialist London clinic has been treating 30 people a month since the end of March this year, more than seven times anticipated demand, taking the total to 855. About a third of gamers receiving treatment said they spent money on loot boxes, gambling-style features that offer randomized rewards such as weapons or outfits for characters that cannot be re-exchanged for cash legitimately. Experts say these features, which have proved highly lucrative for video game firms, are normalizing gambling behaviors in young people by offering the rush of rewards that can entrench addiction. Certain games are particularly likely to be cited by addicts, according to analysis of treatment sessions. During 2021 and 2022, almost 12% of patients who played video games compulsively referred to playing Fortnite, with 10% citing Minecraft, 8% mentioning Call of Duty, and 4.7% using gaming platform Roblox. The clinic offers help to gamers, more than half of whom are children, as well as family members such as parents. Of the 855 referrals, 408 were gamers, of whom 227 were under 18. Patients reported the total breakdown of family relationships, violence, and refusal by children to go to school. I've then got a follow-up article from the BBC and Stefan Powell, because there was news that broke this week about steps that are finally being taken in the UK specifically to address some of these problems. The UK games industry has unveiled plans to try and restrict access to loot boxes for children. Loot boxes allow players to buy in-game extras that are assigned at random, but some are concerned about their relationship with problem gambling. UKIE, but it's written lowercase, so it might be pronounced UKI, which stands for UK Interactive Entertainment and was founded in 1989. The body that represents games companies says the proposals will improve protections for all players. They argue the 11 new guidelines underline the industry's commitment to safe and responsible play. UKI has published principles that it believes will allow the industry to self-regulate the use of loot boxes. The first is a commitment to make available technological controls to effectively restrict anyone under 18 from acquiring a loot box without the consent or knowledge of a parent or guardian. Many of these controls are already available on games platforms, but aren't as widely used as they could be. The new principles set out best practice for their use in an effort to increase take-up. The second is to drive awareness of those controls with a public information campaign. An expert panel will be set up to share the best practices on age assurance issues. Last July, then culture Secretary Nadine Dorries said that because the evidence about loot boxes was still emerging, direct government intervention may risk unintended consequences. The games industry should come up with measures itself before any new laws are introduced, she said. UKI says games companies will disclose the presence of loot boxes before someone chooses to buy a title, and games will have to show clear probabilities before the purchase of a loot box. The plans include rules on how loot boxes should be presented and a commitment to more lenient refund policies. There is also a proposal to tackle the black market that surrounds these purchases and do more research about their impact and use. Progress will be reviewed in 12 months. So
wouldn't want the government to do anything, would we?
Well, that's the thing. On the one hand, I think that the Netherlands and I think Belgium have just banned loot boxes. Yeah. And personally, I think that's great. I don't think there's personally any issue with buying cosmetics, but there's something about the nature of paid for loot boxes that just seems inherently predatory, mm-hmm. even to adults. At the very least, children should be protected. And that currently is, there's just not enough to protect them. And that obviously needs addressing.
Well, that's the thing with the Guardian article. It had a case there about a guy, like in his 20s or 30s, don't know if it said how old he was, but he like had a son on the way and a partner, and they were about to buy a house.
Oh, yeah, that was the BBC article. About
BBC article, was it? Yeah. And he got into a really difficult situation where he was like taking out payday loans and credit cards and stuff, and he just got into like dire straits. And yeah, it is good that more kind of parental control and parental awareness, like kind of mechanics, will be implemented. And even having things like the probabilities laid out, those are all great things. But some of them only go so far as to help parents stop their children getting addicted to things like loot boxes. But if you're, for example, that guy from the article, you would very easily be able to. You're not going to be affected or helped necessarily by parental controls. So there's a more kind of insidious underlying issue with loot boxes that goes beyond just children who are getting addicted to it. So I don't know. I saw an argument somewhere where someone had said. Someone in defense of loot boxes, I think it was like a developer or something, was saying, oh, well, we're more likely to compare them to like Kinder Surprise or...
Surprise mechanics stickers. Is what EA called it.
Yeah, or like sticker collections or like Pokemon cards where you don't know, it's like a blind bag or something. Mm. And I can see how that comparison might be made. But if anything, that just tells me that like, well, yeah, maybe they shouldn't be... Maybe there should be some like kind of control or awareness around those things as well, rather than that makes it okay for loot boxes to exist.
But I also think it's more of a, like, that's more obvious because it's a physical thing.
Yeah.
Like, you can see how many you've bought in front of your face. Like, if you buy 500 Pokemon cards, you have to look at 500 Pokemon cards and think, did I need 500 Pokemon cards?
Yeah.
Whereas if you've just bought like a whole load of loot boxes,
you've got a credit card assigned to your account.
Yeah. There's no like physical kind of indication of like how many you've bought.
I agree, there's a difference, but even if there wasn't, I would say, well, that just tells me that maybe we need to look again at like some of the things that kids can buy in the corner shop, rather than like, oh, well, that, yeah, I guess you're right. Loot boxes are fine. I don't know. Also, interestingly, the National Center for Gaming Disorders, it's not just about addiction with financial consequences. It's about kids, for example, who don't want to go to school because they want to stay at home and play Fortnite or whatever. Mm-hmm. So there are all kinds of issues relating to video game disorders that are seemingly on the rise based on this statistic that they expected about 30 clients a year, or at least they funded 30 clients a year. I don't know. It's a worrying trend. And I think there needs to be more awareness about it. And I think the government need to probably be more aware and care more about it. It just seems to me like it's something that's a bit too far removed from their kind of world at home.
Yeah.
I mean, a lot of things are, to be honest, in Parliament. But
yeah.
I kind of feel like it's easier to go to Parliament and say, hey, can we do something about drug addiction or just gambling addiction in the sense of like going to a casino? Because it's something that they might either have personal experience of, or at least, perhaps understand, they know someone or they understand it. And it's very much you see it on TV, in dramas or whatever. But gaming addiction is less kind of mainstream in that sense. You don't you don't see it represented. So that's part of the issue, I think.
I think like the more specific discussion about loot boxes is very much like the whole of when the fun stop thing that they have a campaign with all the gambling. There's none of those things in place that you can't tell your credit card or debit card company, for example, to be like, can you please put a limit on how much I spend on, like you can with like betting, you can set up a limit with your bank to help stop these kinds of things happening.
Or with the actual online casino
or like, wherever you go, you can actually like physically put in barriers for yourself or for someone else to like stop them being able to do this. You can't necessarily do that with these purchases because they are so predatory and unregulated. And it's just not viewed the same way as a gambling addiction, which I think actually, when you think about it, is very similar to a gambling addiction.
Yeah.
Because they say you know, it's not really money that you're not trying to win money. You don't win anything from this, but that's not really what it is. It's about winning progress in
semantics,
a game that you're
isn't it,
exactly
really?
It but is. That's where they can be like, well, you don't win money, so it's not gambling because you don't win money. But there's plenty of other things you can do in gambling where you're not going to win money, but you're still putting money into it. And I think the thing about gaming disorders and addiction to gaming is that there is needs to be more of a general awareness of like what that can present like, especially in, as well as in adults and kids, like how this can affect people's lives, because you don't really see that much about it. You see like, oh, drinking problems, they can make you sick, they can push you away from your family, you know, they're a horrible thing to do to your body. Same with gambling addiction, so they'll put you in loads and loads of debt, and you'll, you know, all these issues. But I think as soon as something like this starts affecting your relationship with your family, your relationship with yourself, how much you take care of yourself, that's when it's like immediately a problem. And I think you see like all of these gaming like stereotypes of a man in a hovel of a room, like surrounded by filth, just playing games 24/7. That is a gaming addiction as much as it is, you know, when you're addicted to loot boxes or something like that. Mm-hmm. And it's good that these kids are getting help when they're so young. But I also think there needs to be things in place for adults. Admittedly, obviously, it is always like, well, you have to make the first step yourself when you're an adult. But I think that there isn't really anywhere for people to go to seek support. There isn't like a Gaming Addicts Anonymous kind of situation. Well, there might be, but they're definitely not as prevalent as other AA meets stuff is. So I think there's kind of all different reasons, but just a general awareness needs to be added into the public sphere of, if it's affecting your relationships and it's affecting your life, then it's a problem. Like,
Well, and also you mentioned that image of like the gaming addict where they're in like a basement surrounded by Cheetos or whatever. But the issue is that that's not what gaming addiction looks like in a lot of cases. And so it might be easy for someone to think, well, I'm not addicted to gaming. I come home from school and I play it in my bedroom until such, you know, whatever
four
hour
in
of the day.
Morning, and
it's like, well, yeah, but hang on. Like, how is it affecting your life in other ways? Just because you're not that kind of stereotypical gaming goblin character. In a way is, you know, part of the problem is not knowing what it looks like.
Also with kids specifically, a lot of the games they mention are games that are not for kids necessarily, but are kind of marketed towards kids. They're brightly colored, they have the endorphin rush of, you've won this one, now just play another one, or you died quickly, now play another one. Well, if you get this skin if you play another one. Things like Fortnite specifically are really, really catered towards kids. And you see kids that are as young as like 9 playing Fortnite and not younger, because you can play it on your phone, on your iPad, or you've got an Xbox, you can play it on there. Like, you can, you're so like surrounded by Fortnite when you're so young, that I think that that's kind of also the problem, is that these games are marketed for kids and kids don't know that it's a problem until it becomes a natural problem.
Yeah.
You know?
Absolutely. There are people out there with addictive personalities, and some of those people fall victim to those personalities, those specific traits, especially when they are consuming a medium that is specifically designed to have a loop that keeps them engaged and incentivizes spending money and staying put. And I'm talking specifically about adults now, because you're right, Ashton, there should be gambler-aware stuff with loot boxes. I did that. I truly believe that, because, and that isn't me saying it because I think loot boxes are the worst thing, because I do think loot boxes are the worst thing. I don't think they add any value to a game whatsoever. Mm-hmm. And if you must have loot boxes in a game, have them be purchased with in-game currency that you earn from playing. Don't have them be purchasable with real money.
And or just let you be able to just see, don't let them be random. Just say like, oh, in the in-game store, I want that skin, or I want that weapon. Yeah. I'm going to use this much in-game currency.
Or if you really want loot boxes, limit how many you can do a day. You can do 10 loot boxes a day. That's it.
But just some kind of steps could definitely be taken. The articles, all the articles referring to this and covering this repeatedly talk about the numerous warnings that addiction experts in the UK have been shouting about for years now about how these are, they are literally gambling. That's what they are. Mm-hmm. They're designed to be as shiny. Like you talked about the pack of cards, the Pokemon cards and stuff. Like another thing that separates them is that Pokemon cards don't like play a really cool noise and have lots of like visually stimulating stuff. When you like, these are literally intentionally designed to be as appealing as possible for you to, they're meant to, you know,
like
make
machines.
Yeah, they're meant to make as many things in your brain happy when as possible when they open, and like they're specifically designed that way to be addictive. That cannot be disputed. And whether as a consenting adult you want to use them or not is up to you. But if there are people out there who are going to fall victim to this and their entire lives are going to fall apart, those people need help and they need protecting, and there needs to be things in place to help those people. And specifically children, obviously, shouldn't be allowed anywhere near these games. I mean, an outright ban, I think, would be the best case scenario. Mm. But that's not going to happen. I am heartened to hear that Yuki are actually implementing some things. However, further down in the BBC article, I'm not entirely sure how enforceable it is and like whether people will, because there's a little bit here, and this is from Leon Zhao, who's a loot box expert and PhD fellow at the IT University of Copenhagen. He says, Apple says if you want to upload your game to the Apple Store, you need to make disclosures about the probability of randomized features, he said. We checked in 2021 and a third of companies were not doing it. Existing regulation is not being enforced. Mm. So even if this stuff happens, is it going to happen? Mm. Are they going to do it? I had a look at Yuki and they have basically all the big players are partners and they're signed up and involved because it's all in their best interest to fall in line, because otherwise the government does get involved and it does regulate and it does put forward legislation that on a topic that they don't understand, and that will potentially be damaging. But there's going to be a lot of companies that don't want to do that because it makes so much money. And that's what it's going to come down to.
Yeah.
Is the money going to be worth the potential legal headaches? I don't know. But the point is that these people who need protection, and more clearly needs to be done. I don't know if you guys have ever had any experience with sort of the addictive side of video games.
I've certainly not had anything tied to finances in terms of I've not had an addiction to spending or buying anything in game. But I definitely think that I got into a habit of over lockdown, and it was probably partly because I was locked down that like led me to do this. I was just playing Candy Crush a lot, and I would get up in the morning and I would turn it on and play it until I'd run out of lives, and then I would start my day. And it just became part of my routine because there was not much else going on. I was only allowed out for half an hour or whatever, and you know, everyone's got cabin fever. But it got to the point where I had what's known as the Tetris effect, which originally was people would shut their eyes and see Tetris blocks. I would shut my eyes and sometimes I could almost picture the shapes of the candies because I was just playing it that much. Mm. And then as soon as lockdown was over, I stopped playing it quite easily. So it wasn't an addiction in that sense, in that, you know, I found it quite easy to just stop. But yeah, it was very habitual. Mm. And to the point where I did occasionally sort of catch myself and think, why am I sitting here doing this? Like waiting to start my day? You know, why do I feel I have to do this? But yeah, so it could have been worse, but that's probably the most kind of addicted in air quotes I've been to a game.
Mm-hmm. I had a similar mobile game when I was in uni. Found this like, it's like a color by numbers game where it was literally just like a pixel art thing. You tap a color and you make it that color. And I remember like for maybe my second or third year, I spent a lot of time playing that game. Like I had finished so many of these like pictures that it gives you. And Ben used to tell me off because he used to say, when you play that game, you don't speak to anyone. Mm. You don't listen to anyone. You just sit and you tap at your phone like for hours, just in silence. And it'd be like every minute where I wasn't doing anything, I was just like tapping away, like finishing a puzzle or something. And then I realized that like, if I wanted to finish uni and pass the year, I had to uninstall it from my phone because I was just spending time in the library just like tapping away at my phone rather than like actually doing my work. So we had a moment where we all uninstalled the game because a few of us that we were playing it, I was definitely the worst, but they were like, right, let's all uninstall it and then just never talk about this ever again. Mm-hmm. And that was probably the worst I'd been with the game because I literally was just sitting there playing it. I woke up in the morning and before I went to bed, I played it all the time. So, mm-hmm. And it wasn't even a game really. You just tap into screen, filling in boxes yep. with colors. But that's probably the worst it got.
I like to think that I'm quite fortunate in that I don't have a particularly addictive personality. I've smoked cigarettes off and on throughout my adult life, but it's only ever really been for like a week at a time. And then I can quite happily just stop. And that's never really presented an issue. Gambling is just something I'm not interested in. I'm aware of the fun that can come with gambling, but also I'm aware that I'd rather spend that money on pizza. And so I've just never really bothered with that. When it comes to games, it's like, I think the only example I can really think of is maybe Crash Team Racing's remake. Like I got really into the
Grand Prix.
Yeah, the Grand Prix and getting all of the seasonal stuff. And that's the only game that's ever made me do that until one day where I just realized that this was such a chore that I couldn't be asked anymore. And then I stopped. And there have been plenty of times over the years where it's been like I've stayed up until like 4 a.m. playing a game.
Yeah, like a game that you really
because
enjoy.
Because I'm really enjoying it. Yeah. I feel like I'm near the end or something. And there's lots of games I feel like that have done loot box style stuff that I think kind of works. Like Mass Effect 3's multiplayer had sort of loot packs that you could buy with in-game currency and nothing else that would have like character skins and, you know, better weapons and stuff like that. I think there's a place for these, but they have to be done right. The problem is that they don't make any money that way.
Yeah.
And that's going to be the issue. But if this sounds like anything we've spoken about is something that you're experiencing or something that you think may be affecting you in any way, please speak to your GP or your local medical professional and they can hopefully refer you to get the help that you need, even if there's not a specialist gaming center. Mm-hmm. There will be addiction support services available to you, I would imagine, so please do that. If you're in the UK, the NHS is a fantastic resource that we should all support and protect. And once again, it's called the National Center for Gaming Disorders, if you want to bring that up specifically, should you need to talk to anyone. Yeah.
And that's not just, again, it's not financially associated addictions. If it's just eating into your time and so on and affecting your relationships, it doesn't have to be sort of gambling adjacent necessarily.
Absolutely. Yeah. Well, there we are. Thank you so much for listening/watching, everybody. Hopefully, I'm sure you are all having a very civil conversation down in the comments below. You can go to youtube.com/team triple. No, actually, this is Yellow You.
You can go to youtube.com/team triple jump for all of our video content and twitch.tv/team triple jump for all of our live streams. We stream every day. If you've got Amazon, you know, I mentioned it, the value of Amazon Prime. One of the things you're paying for is a Twitch sub, which you might not have redeemed on anyone. Won't cost you anything extra. Redeem it on us if you like. Please.
Go on.
Twitter, Facebook, TikTok, all there. We're Team Triple Jump on all of them. So come check them out. And also check out our Patreon, patreon.com/Team Triple Jump, for all kinds of things on there. And maybe something new very soon.
The website where you can find everything, all the places we are, is triplej.mup. And why not leave a 5-star review on your platform of choice? It helps. Something to do with Al Gore's rhythm. See, we got a slightly different running order this week for the first time.
Did you like it?
Still working out, a little bit more streamlined. Peter's going to tell you about this week's sponsor one more time before we go away.
Alan, he gets those criminals and he's so hot. That's right. Sexy Crime Al. Sexo Crime Al.
There it is.
Get it?
Do you?
Good. Do you get it?
Do you get it?
Did you get it earlier?
Dinosaurs.
Did you get it? See. Bye, everybody.
But bye.
Bye.
Hey, it's Danny Pellegrino from Everything Iconic. Ready to upgrade your style game without blowing your budget? Check out Quince. They've got all the good stuff, shirts and polos, activewear and fine leather goods, all at 50 to 80% less than other high-end brands. And the best part? They're all about safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. Get that luxury vibe without the luxury price tag. Hit up Quince.com/upgrade
upgrade for free shipping and 365-day returns on your next order. That's quince.com/upgrade.
Hi, I'm Daniel, founder of Pretty Litter. Cats and cat owners deserve better than any old-fashioned litter. That's why I teamed up with scientists and veterinarians to create Pretty Litter. Its innovative crystal formula has superior odor control and weighs up to 80% less than clay litter. Pretty Litter even monitors health by changing colors to help detect early signs of potential illness. It's the world's smartest kitty litter.
Go to prettylitter.com and use code ACAST for 20% off your first order and a free cat toy. Terms and conditions apply. See site for details.